Grove. So I'd like to say hello to everyone. It's been wonderful to see old friends and new friends and in-between friends. This has certainly been already a very inspiring day for me, and I'm sure for all of you as well. We are going to each of us have a small presentation and then open it up for discussion. And we're hoping, of course, that some of the things we say will stimulate your ideas and comments, because this is a joint effort. We're all women who love the Sabbath and are participating in that. And after all of the very profound presentations we've had, this is real light, gals, believe me. This is not something that comes from great theological background. Our speakers, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the ladies here. Sandy O'Malley, you've read the bio. I've just had the opportunity recently to get to know Sandy a bit. I've been most impressed. She's a lovely lady. She has endured a great deal over the last year or so because of her love and devotion for the Sabbath. She's just been a real rock. Carolyn Sharpen and Scott have been in our Garden Grove congregation now for, a couple, 3 years, Carolyn? They've contributed immensely. They've just been a wonderful addition to the congregation. So Sandra is going to begin with a presentation called Health Issues, the Sabbath, and the Modern Woman.
Thank you. It's really a joy to be at a conference like this. It's been quite an odyssey for all of us that we've been through in the Worldwide Church of God. And about 3 months ago, I participate on the internet, and I had a deep desire, along with many of my friends who were suffering along with myself, to come together with people of like mind. I just wanted to see some faces of people again who felt like I did about the things that I believed. So I proposed over the internet. I said, I want a conference. Is there anybody out there who wants to get together? And John Merritt, a longtime friend of ours, running back clear back to 1971, I think we met John when we were working here or in Pasadena. We worked on the campus. I was receptionist for the press, and my husband is an attorney, and he worked in Mr. Helge's legal office. One day, walking across the campus, we met John, and it continued. Our relationship with him went forward from that point on. He's a very dear friend of ours. So I asked, anybody want a conference? And John popped up with a wonderful idea. He said, what do you think about a jubilee celebrating the Sabbath? And I said, and he said, we'll call ourselves the Friends of the Sabbath. And I emailed back to him. I said, I am a friend of the Sabbath. Let's do it. And he did. There's always that saying, if you want something done, give it to a very busy person, and it'll get done. And that's John. I don't know how he accomplishes all that he does, but he does. I want to thank my husband and son who are making a bit of a sacrifice. I know they'd love to be hearing this lecture over here also, but they're here supporting me today. Bless their hearts. Well, when I was asked to prepare this speech, I took some time out to search out various topics that would relate to the Sabbath and the modern woman. And not knowing exactly how long my presentation was to be, I was searching for a subject that could be extended or contracted, depending on how it all finally fell out for all of us here on this panel. I finally found a topic that I thought was really appropriate, because there are virtually thousands of things that have been recorded, written, talked about on my topic. But I knew if I just said the word, all I'd have to do is say the word, and every one of you out there would say, I'm an expert on this particular subject. So I knew I could talk for hours or talk for minutes. And my subject today is going to be about stress. See? There we go. Now I could sit down. It's done. We know everything. But I'm going to tell you about the why the Sabbath might be the modern woman's cure for this problem that plagues all of us. First of all, I'm going to read something to you, and I have my notes here today because I'm in that time of life when we ladies walk to the freezer and open the door. What am I doing here? So we walk back to wherever it was we came from, and we stand there and say, why am I here? That could go on all day. So here we are. I want to read something to you from the Woman's Encyclopedia of Health and Natural Healing by Emerika Pattis. This is a book I really appreciate. In her book, she states that women are better able to tolerate stress than men. And I found that kind of interesting. I sort of thought it was the other way around. But she says, fundamentally, we women can tolerate more stress than men. And in a study that she quotes from, she says that research has shown that women's adrenaline levels do not rise as rapidly as men's in conflict situations. Now, we always knew we should have run the world. We knew there'd be no war if we women ran the world, right? Wrong, probably. But she also tells us that the perspective for today's modern woman has changed. And the reason is our greater ability to tolerate stress may not do us much good anymore. The reason being, now the average woman is under a good deal more stress than the average men. And I think somehow we could think about our lives and we can understand. But I'm going to tell you why. She says this means we're more anxious, worried, tense, and with less time for relaxation than ever before. Emerika Pattis describes the modern woman's plight of choosing between the traditional role of housewife and mother and the role of the career woman. When I started out, my biography, maybe you noticed, said that I have a degree. I used to be a high school teacher. When I became pregnant, I opted, rather than to try and continue my career, I stayed home and raised my son. But many women today, because of economic situations and a wide range of reasons, find themselves trying to balance both roles, the housewife, the mother role, and also the role of the career woman. She says this puts us modern women, in a state of anxiety that was not known to earlier generations of women. And I think we can understand that. So she asks, how do we cope with all of this? Her answer to this question will lead to my topic, the Sabbath, stress, and the modern woman. So, what is her answer? Pattis writes, well, the first step is to recognize the stress before it calls out with problems so great that we can't ignore it. I mean, once you've had a heart attack, you know you've been under stress for quite a long time. There's no question about it. But let me interrupt her thought for a moment, because I want to make sure that all of you understand that you suffer from this syndrome now and then. Have you ever made any of these telltale statements that help us, that would tell you you're under stress? I find it difficult to concentrate. I worry too much over something that really doesn't matter. I feel like I'm losing out on things because I can't make up my mind soon enough. I can't keep anxiety-provoking thoughts out of my mind. I feel jittery. I feel tense in my stomach. I nervously pace, I perspire, I'm tired for no reason. We keep that 911 number handy all the time. Pattis continues, stress, anxiety, tension, call it what you will, is a real threat to health. In fact, according to many doctors, between 50 and 80% of all illnesses, everything from cancer to dandruff, may be related to stress. And I sat in a doctor's office one time as I was having a physical problem, and when he stepped out of the room, I noticed a little brochure on his desk, and I picked it up to read it while he was gone. And in that brochure, it said that 90% of all illnesses can be related to stress. And once having recognized the stress we are carrying, Pattis recommends that we ease up on the load. And how should we ease up? That's probably what we really all want to know. Pattis admits that it takes a concerted effort and a strong will to admit that you don't have to do everything and that no one expects you to be perfect, except in our minds. We think our husbands, our children, our neighbors, our churchmates, Everybody expects perfection from us, but that's really not the case. In fact, sometimes people are more comfortable with you if some of your imperfections come up. It makes them feel better around being around you. But then the woman realizes, but then she says that in the management of stress, we women, and this is something I really want you to appreciate, that we in this room have already discovered, but maybe we don't appreciate it like we should. Part of her answer to our stress problem is that we women can learn that it is okay to take a day off now and then. Now, does that last statement sound or bring anything to mind for you relative to the conference that we're here enjoying today? Patta says, in our management of stress, and I'll say it again, it is okay to take a day off now and then. Now, I think you know where I'm going with all of this. So now I'm going to read something to you from another book, a book I know everyone in this room is very well familiar with. It's the instruction manual written for mankind that tells him what he needs to know to live a healthy life. That book is called The Holy Bible, and it was inspired by our great Creator God, the one that we're here learning about and celebrating at this conference. Now, do you think that God, I don't want to skip this part. He said, 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, of ceasing from your work. And Pattis has already told us, in order to combat stress, we need to take a day off now and then. God said about himself, as Mr. Dart pointed out over here, and I thought it was interesting, he was focusing on something that I, just for the first time, maybe in my understanding of the Sabbath, focused on when I was preparing this, that in the verse 17 of Exodus 31, God goes on to say that on the seventh day, God rested and he was refreshed. It doesn't say we were refreshed. He was refreshed. God himself finds refreshment from taking time off or ceasing certain activities for a period of time. Now, do you think the God who made us knew there would be modern women in the 20th century who would suffer from heart problems, stomach disorders, cancers, bone diseases? Since much of the Bible, and I think many of us know this, about a third of it is involved with prophecies relating to our time, I can guarantee you that he knew there would be a time like ours. Now, all of us here have come together to learn more about the Sabbath day. This is an opportunity for us to renew ourselves in a belief that has been under severe challenge of late, something I don't think any of us in this room would have really thought could happen to members of the Worldwide Church of God. But here we are, and we are renewing ourselves in that fundamental belief. The Bible tells us that God made this day for human beings. He spells it out. He says, I didn't make you for the Sabbath, but I did make the Sabbath day for you. And I wonder how much we appreciate that statement. He made it for us. He didn't make anything we didn't need. He made the Sabbath day for us. In rehearsing this with you, I just want you to see that Pattis, the woman who wrote the book I mentioned earlier, wasn't the only one who was going to reach the conclusion that it would be good for us to take a day off now and then. Obviously, God had reached that conclusion for man at his creation. And here we are, thousands of years later, since the book of Genesis was written, discovering that we should take a day off now and then. Now, I want to shift gears just a little bit. I want to tell you something about this world that we live in. It's a realization that I came to while I was reading a book, a very current and popular book at this time, and the name of the book is The Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield. Now, this is a book that takes the reader on an odyssey to discover missing parts of a manuscript that contains secrets that allow you to find connections for the various events in your life. It's sort of this happened because this was going to happen, because linking up all the events of your life in a meaningful way. And then it allows you to look on into the future. It gives you some insights that allow you to see into the future. Well, I know we'd all love a book like that, but I think we all agree we have one. Let me find my spot here. This is, I believe, you know, anyway, okay, I'm sorry. But the book makes a point, and this book makes a point about our culture that I think would be of interest to all of us in this room today, and that's why I want to talk to you just briefly about it. It might help us to understand why we carry such a heavy burden of stress in our society. The insight given in this book sort of focuses on that idea. One of the insights arrives at regarding our current civilization as this. In our modern age, and they take this back to the mid-1700s and forward, as our modern age began, a growing democratic spirit led to the distrust of religious and royal authority. Man became skeptical, and he quit accepting definitions of the universe based on speculations or scriptural faith. We, mankind, no longer wanted churchmen to control or dictate our reality. So we developed a new way of systematically exploring our world. That new approach to discovering reality became what we call the scientific method, and we're still using that today. We sent out explorers to use this scientific method to arrive at conclusions that would define this new reality for us. We were going to redefine our reason for living on this earth, and that reason had to relate to tests and conclusions performed and arrived at by our ambassadors of science. Unfortunately, these men failed us. They were not able, through their explorations of our world, to arrive at a new and logical explanation of God or the reason for our existence. Well, left without this understanding that we had been seeking, mankind settled into a sort of, let's just put it on the shelf until something else comes along. His involvement turned away from a desire to understand his nature and his place or his God, and he became focused on simply settling comfortably into the world in which he lives. A preoccupation then developed with raising the standard of our living and increasing our security in the world. Using the resources of the world, man found means to increase and better himself until the pursuit of physical comfort became an end in itself. And that began to displace and has displaced the need to know for many, not all, but for many, the need to know answers to the questions he had once thought were so important. Who am I and what is my destiny? I mentioned at the beginning of my description of this insight from the Celestine Prophecy that I believe we have a book, a manuscript, if you will, that gives us the answer to these questions that men were looking for but failed to discover in their pursuit of determining who they are and what their destiny really is. I believe the Bible gives us these answers. Unfortunately, the theologians guiding our forefathers along did not make these answers clear for them. And thus man turned from them as a source of wisdom and guidance. Well, those of us sitting here in this room have the answer. We have at least a good part of it. And I want to focus your attention upon it because it really does lie here with all of us. I want to read to you a paragraph from an article that appeared in the January-February issue of Liberty Magazine, and it was written by Walter Booth. The title of the article is The Seventh Day Idea. In his excellent article, Mr. Booth states, "The Sabbath reminds us that human beings are a creation of God. And it is in that context that the Sabbath must be understood. The Sabbath teaches that we were created by a transcendent God in his image, that we exist for a purpose, that there is a divine ideal for our lives, and that this purpose and ideal are exalted beyond measure. We believe," he said, "that an infinite God who transcends us without limit would never have created us in his image without having plans for our lives that are incomparably grand and glorious." I read to you a moment ago, mankind has spent his entire history seeking these answers. And this gentleman says, Sabbath keepers have them. Well, back to my original thesis. Now, I already mentioned, in order to relieve our stress, we can take a day off. And I showed you that God came up with the answer for us a long time ago. As I read to you from the Woman's Encyclopedia of Health, I showed you only one of the suggestions for handling stress. Here's another. Besides exercise, which we've heard all of us need to be exercising, and if we don't, it's just guilt everywhere, isn't it? But we know that's a common answer. But here's another one that she presents, and I think it's important for those of us who are here today. She said, besides exercise, it would be good, and it has been proven, that putting aside some time for meditation and solitude is an excellent way to combat stress syndromes. It was found in a study that she mentions that was conducted at Yale University that persons who meditated for at least 6 months tended to have a much reduced level of stress. They were much less likely to report having the symptoms that I read to you earlier or asked you if you could relate to earlier. Now, I want to bring all of this back to our observance of the Sabbath. A moment ago, I read to you a statement by Walter Booth about the Sabbath. I want to point out some of the wonderful concepts that he presented that would give a Sabbath keeper much to meditate upon. We know the Bible tells us about the Sabbath, that on the Sabbath, God is not wanting us having our own thoughts. But what does he want us to think about? Here are some of those ideas again, quickly. The Sabbath reminds us that human beings are a creation of God. Once a week, God wants us to think about that. The Sabbath teaches that we were created by a transcendent God in His image. That's a huge, enormous thought. That we exist for a purpose. Do you ever get lost in your week and wonder where you're going and why you're even trying to do it? But once a week, God says, I want you to focus on the fact that I created you for a purpose. That there is a divine ideal for our lives. That this purpose and ideal are exalted beyond measure. We can't even fathom it entirely. Our thoughts just aren't large enough. That God would not have created us in His image without having plans for our lives that are incomparably grand and glorious. There's nothing else that can be compared to what God has in mind for us. And once a week, He wants us to think about it because He knows it will refresh us, all of us here. I also told you that throughout man's history, he has sought to answer some of the questions Mr. Booth explains are made evident by our observance of the Sabbath. So I want to tell you now that taking a day each week to meditate upon these questions and to search out these answers will give you peace that is not only of great spiritual value to you, but it's also of great physical value to you. Well, that's all I'm going to present to you today. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with all of you, and I'm going to turn it back over to our panel leader, Leanne.
Thank you, Sandy. Wonderful food for thought, huh? Well, Carolyn is going to speak to us now on Sabbath and the Superwoman.
Thank you. Good afternoon. How's everyone? Need a bit of a stretch? I haven't had an opportunity to be at some of the other sessions this morning. I've been looking after my son, but I hope you're enjoying it. And if you hear a few coos, that's him over there. My husband's looking after him. I wanted to talk a little bit today about Sabbath and the Superwoman. I would like to ask how many Superwomen do we have here today? I want to see everybody's hand up, please. Everybody's hand up. I believe everybody should have their hand up because, like Sandy mentioned, I think today's modern woman has been called upon to play more roles today than perhaps any other roles in history. As you may have read from my biography, I just completed my master's in career counseling, and one of the things that was the most interesting to me as I went through my master's program was this observation of the various roles that we play and gaining some kind of balance between the various roles. And I started thinking about it a little bit more because some of the clients that were coming to me were expressing dissatisfaction with their lives. What would typically happen is somebody would have a great career, but their family and their leisure time was limited. Or they had a great family, but their work wasn't satisfying. Or they had wonderful hobbies, but they wanted to turn that into work or something. And the more that I observed that dissatisfaction, the more I started studying into that, and it became an area of interest for me during my master's program, this area of balancing work, family, and leisure. And I found, too, that inevitably what we tend to do as human beings when we're not happy is we tend to do more things. We think, oh, if I just do a little more, maybe I'll be a little happier. I'll just add a little bit here. I'll just add. And ultimately, that was unsatisfying because we ended up with less time and we weren't doing as well on any of those things. And so more and more I began to see that we needed an integration between the work and family and leisure activities in our lives. It's not just simply enough to be saying, I'm doing this particular role or I have this kind of activity. We need integration. So as I progressed a little bit more through my degree, I found that a couple of theorists discussed this point, defined it a little bit, and one of them that I found very useful was Donald Super, who talked about the roles that we play in life. And I would like to as I discuss some of these roles, I'd like you to write down which of these roles you were currently playing. Okay? Child. I would assume all of us are children, and many of us have responsibilities as children to our parents. So if you are currently a child and you have responsibilities, write that down. What about a student? How many of us are going to school? That's a particular role that we may be playing. We may be a student of the Bible. Write down student. How many of us are spouses if we're married? That's another role that we play. It's something else that utilizes our time, hopefully so. How many of us are siblings, brothers and sisters that we have responsibilities towards? Parents or grandparents? How many of us are workers, whether inside or outside of the home? All of us. How many of us are retirees? Because that in itself brings a whole change of life and another role. How many of us are citizens or volunteers, active in our community? That takes time. How many of us are friends? We write letters, we're mentors, we help other people. That takes time as well. How many of us are Christians? All of us. That's another role that we play. And what about hobbies and our leisure activities? That again takes time. So as you can see, you've got about 10 or 11 different roles that we play, sometimes one, sometimes many. And so we begin to understand a little bit more about what Sandy's talking about when we feel like we're stressed, because we only have 24 hours a day in which to do these things. So as Super developed a little bit of this theory, he noted that inevitably the responsibilities that go with some of these roles intersect. So for instance, the role of a mother may at times conflict with work, if we have to work outside of the home. Inevitably, being a mother, I say to Scott, I now understand what the meaning of full-time work is now that I have a baby, because people define full-time work as 8 to 5, but motherhood is not 8 to 5, as we all know. So that can conflict if people want to return to work outside of the home. The problem is that while, and Super mentioned this, that while the more roles that we have, it can be rich and rewarding, and we can have this sort of tapestry, people have heard me talk about before, this tapestry of life, it can be very rich and rewarding, or at least it has the potential to be. The problem is that, again, these roles sometimes conflict, and they intersect. And sometimes we've entered into these roles without a whole lot of thought. For instance, we say, I want to volunteer. I want to be out there serving the community, but we don't recognize that that in itself, while it's a lofty goal, may conflict with some of the other roles that we hold, and then we become ineffective in both of those roles. So as you survey the list of roles, think briefly about the activities that go into each one of those roles in your lives. The conclusion inevitably is that we do a lot, don't we? We do a lot. There's this emphasis in Western culture on doing. And we, particularly as women, the roles can be very demanding, as Sandy mentioned, because if you have child care, again, that's sort of a 24-hour, round-the-clock thing. Or many women are also looking after their family. So you get this crunch where you're looking after your elders, you're looking after your parents, and you're looking after children. And so sometimes the roles that fall to women are unique, because really elder care and child care still fall largely on the women in our culture. And so they can be very demanding, and I think perhaps we don't take stock of that often enough. So the superwoman of the 90s obviously can find that her life is very stressed, very sometimes fragmented. We kind of, you know, go to the freezer and we forget. And I do that now. I'm going, what happened? I thought this was pregnancy. I thought it was supposed to end, but it's still going on. We find ourselves very, you know, pulled in a lot of directions. And that's really where the Sabbath comes in. And I suspect that I'm preaching to the choir here in a lot of senses, because the Sabbath is what really rescues us from all of that. Theoretically, the Sabbath should be providing an opportunity to rest from all of that. And that is that we should make a conscious decision not to work and not to labor anymore, but just to be. Now, I know this is kind of a philosophical point, but it is okay just to be. We don't have to be doing all of the time. And the Sabbath gives an opportunity for us to cease from our work, and we can actually just be a child of God, because God takes us as we are without having to do a single thing. Isn't that lovely? We don't have to do a single thing to claim God's attention. We can just be a child of God. We can just be a recipient of grace. We can just exist, we can rest, we can enjoy, we can rejoice. My own experience has been that I have been, for the past 2.5 years, working full-time and part-time, going to school during the day and night, on the freeway 6 times a day, going to internship sites and school. Had a home, had a garden, had a husband I'd like to see every once in a while. Had church responsibilities, family, and then I got pregnant during the latter part of my master's degree. So I asked myself, how was I able to maintain my sanity? And I came up with 3 very key reasons. And one is certainly God. You know, he helped me throughout the entire thing in terms of giving me strength. Secondly, I have a wonderful, supportive husband who is very active in helping our family, and I just never want to take him for granted. But thirdly, the Sabbath, because the Sabbath allowed me to reflect on my path on the week. Make some course corrections. Was I perhaps involved in too many roles? Did I need to pull back? For instance, I was very involved in YOU, or I wanted to be, but it was one of those things that as I progressed more into my master's program, I had to let it go. It was painful for me. I wanted to be involved in it, but I couldn't do it. So I think there is a recognition, again, as Sandy mentioned, of the roles that we play and when we're no longer effective in those roles. And I don't know that I would have come to that point had I not had some time to reflect on it, because the Sabbath gave me that time. Because what would we do if we didn't have the Sabbath? We'd keep on going. We'd just do it 7 days a week instead of 6, because that's the human element and that's what society asks us to do. I found that the Sabbath gave me, again, a joy in the knowledge that despite the successes and failures in those roles, God still accepted me. Because inevitably, when we're doing all of these things, we find that we don't think we've come up to par. We don't think that we've done quite as well as we should have. And I say, instead of that, we should be saying, wow, I'm doing a great job in all of these things. How is it that I am doing this great job? But the wonderful thing is, God couldn't really care. God takes us as we are because he knew our successes and our failures before we ever began. He knows our hearts. He knows our abilities. So I love that fact that I can just be Carolyn before God. I don't have to be anything else. All I need to be is a child of God. I think another point, reiterating what Sandy mentioned, is that there's more to physical life. There's more than these physical roles that we become involved in. And for me, it takes the frame of that it's training for a future role, whatever God will decide that I have, you know, whatever talents he wants to use or whatever. But there's more to physical life, and that encourages me, because I can get discouraged sometime when I'm not accomplishing everything that I think I should be in this physical life. I can think of on the Sabbath that there's a greater purpose, and the Sabbath reminds me of that, because God created the Sabbath with a plan in mind, with a purposeful plan in mind. For me particularly, I find that the Sabbath is a joy because I can think of the future rest for many of the clients that I serve. Many of the people that I see are very troubled, very deeply enmeshed in a lot of difficulties. I used to come home from counseling a lot, and not so much anymore because I would go to college now, but before I used to come home to Scott and just cry for some of the things that people were having to go through in this world. And it was such a joy to me to weekly say, you know, there's a time coming when people will not have to suffer this way anymore, and that I'm going to have a part in that. So there was an absolute joy in understanding that there was a purpose and that there is something grander in mind and that there's something beyond this world. The Sabbath also offered me an opportunity to reconnect, because I think, as I mentioned, we tend to get really fragmented and we kind of go here and there, and the Sabbath is a wonderful time to actually touch base with our church family and come back with people of like mind, because we've been out there and we haven't necessarily found those kindred spirits. Not that they aren't out there, but maybe we haven't had time to find them, and so the Sabbath offers us an opportunity to gain that support. So the conclusion I came to as a career counselor and a Christian is that everybody needs a 24-hour Sabbath, because we need that deep physical, spiritual rest. We need to know that there is a plan of God. We need to know that there's something more than physical life. We need to know that there's a purpose for some of the roles that we play and some of the roles we'll play in the future. How much I wish that I could give that blessing and knowledge to a lot of the clients that I see, because there has been a general return to spirituality amongst, you know, in the world. And if it hasn't been spirituality, it's therapy, because therapy is man's solution to problems without God. So, you know, you wonder why people are going to counselors in the amounts that they are. It's because people recognize there's a problem. That's not the issue. People just don't know how to solve it. But we do. We've been given the Sabbath with a plan and a focus that is the greatest gift our Creator could have given us. And I would just ask, are we taking advantage of the Sabbath in that way? I don't know that I even recognized the benefits until I was challenged on it. And, you know, until this recent occurrence, where I certainly understood that I appreciated the Sabbath, but even going through and developing this talk, I just understood how much it really meant to me. And I would ask you, as you're looking at your list and you're looking at the roles that you play, are you achieving some kind of a balance? Are you involved in too many things? Or maybe do you want to add something? I would say probably not. But do you want to change some of those roles? And are you using the Sabbath to its fullest advantage? Are you resting? Can we actually stop long enough from doing to actually enjoy the Sabbath, to just reflect? I say there is help for the superwoman. It's the super Sabbath. And I'm really glad we have it. Thank you.
Well, now you know why I value my new friendship here with Sandy, and also greatly value Carolyn's contribution to the Garden Grove congregation. Well, when I began to think about this topic, when John Merritt first approached me about it, I found I was having difficulty defining this whole concept in some ways of the modern woman. And the more I came to consider that aspect, the more I came to the conclusion that the circumstances of life may change, but the needs always remain the same. And whether we are women at the time of Christ, whether we're pioneer women going west in a covered wagon, or whether we're women who are traveling west on a jet plane, we're still women. And our needs and the needs of those around us remain the same, regardless of the circumstances. And we've already heard, and so beautifully put, from both of these women about the need for us to remember the Sabbath as a day of rest. But I wanted to focus then a little bit more on the aspect of the Sabbath as a day to celebrate and as a day to do good, as Jesus also instructed. Whatever the era, whatever the age, whatever the gender, human beings all need to be nurtured. And I think that the Sabbath provides a unique opportunity for us as women to utilize those God-given talents and abilities. We don't have to be married. We don't have to be mothers or have children to be nurturers. All that we have to be in that sense is Christian women, handmaids of the Lord. And you know, all of this whole thing has been a learning experience, I know, for all of us. And I'm sure that all of us, I'll speak certainly for myself, when I first began to observe the Sabbath, I really did think of it more as a day of restraint. You know, it was more of a day on which I could not do this or that, rather than a day of what I could do. And it has been a learning and a maturing process to think of the Sabbath in more positive terms. And today I really do primarily think of the Sabbath as a delight. And as Carolyn said, and I believe Sandy as well, a gift, this wonderful, precious gift that has been given me. I no longer worry about whether or not my house is perfectly clean before the sun goes down on Friday, and, you know, all of those things that were once just so important. It's not important in the same way. I enjoy a clean house, so for me that adds to my delight in the Sabbath if things are basically in order. That's my personality. That isn't everyone else's personality, if they could care less. And if that's not your particular bent, it's still important to focus on what is that thing that makes the Sabbath a delight for you. And I realize this is a huge generality, but for the most part, women are more creative in their thinking than men. For the most part, and again, that's a generality, I know, but for the most part, women are more right-brained than men. And so I think in that regard, when it comes to the celebration of the Sabbath, when it comes to making this day a delight, that women have more that opportunity to bring that kind of an atmosphere and to have the ideas to create the celebration aspect of the Sabbath. So I thought I'd just go through some of the things that have come to me through the years with all the people that I've met from around the world, ideas that I found particularly inspiring in the way of creating this the concept of a joy and a delight. One of the most important is that the Sabbath is called a feast day. It's also a feast. It's referred to in Leviticus 23 as a feast of the Lord. So food is always a wonderful part to have the special things that your family enjoy. But again, the concept of balance, we're not superwomen, you know. Making it special does not mean it has to be elaborate. I have this wonderful maid who often helps me out. Her name is Sarah Lee. And I know whatever part of the country you are from, there are maids that, to give you a hand along this line as well. But I think that food is a major part of celebration throughout the Bible, and I think in most of our lives. It's a part of making life special and joyful. So having those special type things that are reserved for the Sabbath or will add to that whole concept of making this such a joyful day. I chuckled with Dr. Bakayoki's comments on the special pizza and the fact that he even included the recipes, because it is a major part of celebrating this day. Several years ago, I knew a lady in Arizona who collected very inexpensive dishes from secondhand shops, and every Friday evening it was her children's responsibility to do the table setting, and she had collected all sorts of varieties of patterns and colors of china and dishes. None of them were expensive. None of it was a precious heirloom from great-great-aunt or grandmother so-and-so, so she was not worried about anything being broken. The children had free rein to create any atmosphere they wanted with the table for Friday night dinner. Now, you know, not all of us have space in apartments or whatever to store lots of dishes, but a similar thing can be done with paper plates and a variety of colored napkins or theme type napkins or whatever. And again, I know for so many of us anymore, Friday nights and even Saturday nights, frankly, to actually have dinners. Mitzi had us for dinner Friday night. I thank her very much. But many of us, Friday night comes in, and that's the last thing we really feel able to do, isn't it? To have people in for dinner. But what about just having someone for dessert and coffee? Again, with the help of Sara Lee. It's as well as a time for enjoying the good things of life. Fellowship is certainly another part of adding tremendously to the joy of the Sabbath. One of my particular Sabbath delights has always been music. And for a number of years, it's been my tradition to listen to Handel's Messiah Sabbath morning. I just love that piece of music. And of course, the time came when my children were teenagers that, oh, did I endure ridicule for my Messiah. You know, that they would make fun of the arias and he will shake. They'd just go on and they'd roll their eyes and carry on. Well, about a year ago, I sent them each a CD of a newer version of the Messiah called Young Messiah. It's a more contemporary arrangement using modern instrumentation, and I thought they would enjoy this a lot more. Well, later I asked my daughter if she liked the CD. And there was this pause, and then this little halting comment, you know, she says, well, Mom, I really like the old one better. Now, if you really would have to know the amount of ridicule I took all those years to appreciate this story. But it still impressed me that though they made fun of it, the beauty of that music and the message of that music did have an impact on my children's life. So I think, again, music is something that can add tremendously to the beauty and the joy and the serenity of the Sabbath. Another lady I knew had a habit of every Friday night, she gave everyone in her family a gift. Now, it was never anything big. It might be an eraser she knew one of the kids needed. It might be a new pair of shoestrings. Generally, it was something like that, that she could just pick up at the grocery store when she was doing her weekly shopping. But again, it was something that that family enjoyed, and she enjoyed the doing of it. Sometimes it might even just have been a pack of lifesavers for the kids to have the next day at church. My sister always kept special toys reserved only for the Sabbath. Her children were, you know, these toys would be put away from after sunset, and then the children did not have those toys to play with again till the next Sabbath. So they were like brand new toys each week. And she did the same thing for church. She had church toys. So each week those toys were new, and they were more interesting then to the children. And it made the Sabbath, again, more special even for her very little children. My own children now, with our grandchildren, use special videos that are appropriate for the Sabbath. And there are so many wonderful things available. They sit down and they can watch these even as a family and talk about them. Some of them are the Bibles on, stories done almost in cartoon-type fashion. But they're wonderful, and they can talk about the lessons and what they learned. We have a music video ourselves where it is just pieces of classical music, and it's photos of all of the beautiful national parks in America. No dialogue at all. And sometimes when we're sitting there in the morning having our breakfast, I'll pop in that video, and it's just wonderful. You know, it really, we live in a condo in Southern California, and there's not a lot of nature right around us. So this transports us to the beauty of God's creation and is a reminder of that wonderful aspect. The same thing is true of a Sabbath walk. I love a walk. This last Sabbath, we took a walk, and this time of year, the jacarandas are blooming. And where we walk, they are planted along the medium strip. And in many of the areas where we were walking, the sidewalk was just a carpet of purple. It was so beautiful. And the mockingbirds are back singing away. It was just absolutely delightful. But I think we have to make the effort to reconnect with the Sabbath creation, because so many of us don't have it around us. So many of us don't even have yards, it seems. You know, we are jammed up in our concrete jungles, and we have to make that effort to reconnect with nature and see the beauty of the creation. another family kept a blessing box. And this was a box the kids made out of a shoebox or whatever and decorated all up. And all week long, anything that good that happened to any of them that they considered a blessing would be written down and put in the box. And Friday night was their tradition after dinner to open the blessing box and read all of the good things that had happened to the family for that week. And again, you don't have to be married. You don't have to have a family to do something of this type. You can keep a little record yourself of your blessings. You can have special friends that you share those things with on a regular basis. Want to give us a little bit time here for discussion. Our time, we're like Dr. Bakayoki, where is our time going? It's just flying. But perhaps the most important nurturing of all we've already heard about from these lovely ladies, and that is to take time to nurture ourselves. And I think it is so easy because for the most part, we women are nurturers of others. We really do have that as an inherent part of us, as a gift from God, to be the mothering personalities and caretakers. And it is very difficult for us sometimes to take the time for ourselves. And these ladies have said a great deal about that aspect of the Sabbath. And as Carolyn said, we really do live in a society that places such enormous stress on this whole concept of doing rather than being. This is definitely a problem in our Western society and more especially a problem in America. It's not as much of a problem in other societies. But I know I find myself feeling guilty, even on the Sabbath, if I ever just sit. It's always, even on the Sabbath, I find it so easy to feel caught up in the concept, well, I should be writing a note to so-and-so. I ought to make a call to check on so-and-so. I ought to, and the list of do's goes on and on. This whole concept of taking time to be renewed spiritually is extremely important. But because it isn't more of an intangible, I think we forget to see it as accomplishing, as in that sense, doing. We need to never, ever let that aspect of our spiritual life slip, that when we are spending time with our Father and with our Savior, we are doing, in that sense, the most important thing any human being can ever do. If we do let our own spiritual batteries run down, after that, ladies, no matter what we keep on doing, of what value is it? We have nothing left of real value then to impart to others, do we? So above all, in your joy of the Sabbath and in seeing it as a celebration, don't neglect your own being and your relationship with God. And remember that the Sabbath is His gift, and He wants to nurture you on His Sabbath day. Yeah. Now, we have a few more minutes until 2:30, so we'd like to open it up for comments because I know many of you could have easily given these presentations equally or perhaps even better. So we'd really like to hear some of the things that you have found in your experience as Sabbath-keeping ladies. And we would like to ask that you wait for Carolyn to bring the mic because this is being recorded, so it isn't just for others to hear it so that it can be picked up on the tape. Any comments? In the back, Carolyn? Could you come forward to her in the microphone, please?
My name is Linda Star Wars, and I'm from San Diego, California. And this is an excellent program, and we'd like to see more of it. One of the things that my husband and I do on the Sabbath is we like to cheer up people with little tiny things, like maybe one flower and a little note. And sometimes I'll make a meatloaf from time to time, and just a little gift. And that sometimes gets the person through that day. They might have had a rough week. So that's how we show our appreciation for what God has blessed us with. Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. Good suggestion. Any other comments? Oh, ladies, I know all of you are a wealth of information and ideas here.
Hello, I'm Cheryl Nakashima from the United Church of God, Garden Grove. Oh, thank you. We have found, as our children have grown and finally have moved out, I still have my dog, though, that we belong to a private clubhouse, and they have a fire ring there, so even though we are very tired sometimes, we have invited other families there, and we go over, and everybody has to be responsible for their own meal, and if you don't want to cook there, you don't have to. We just come and sit, and we sit around the fire, and we really are being refreshed while we're there, even though we have all had very full, tiring evenings or weeks, excuse me. And it just seems like we just do have the time then for it. And we just have really developed some wonderful, wonderful friends. And I believe we'll be friends unto eternity because we make the effort to do this and make it a delight.
Thanks, Cheryl. Good comment. It is interesting how you can be just totally exhausted, but how being with others of like mind invigorates you. Wrong word. Any other comments? Connie?
I'm Connie Davis with the United Church of God. I work full-time, but I find being a part of our choir with Mr. Salcedo as our director, it's a lot of work, but I look forward to it every Sabbath. It's a relaxation to me, and I really feel that's a blessing.
Thanks, Connie. Contributing to others also, it really does enhance our own joy in life, doesn't it? But as Carolyn brought out, even then, we still sometimes have to take a long, hard look at how many contributions we're making. Any other comments?
I'm Arlene Ness from the Church of God of Modesto. What I like to do is to walk into the room after services and see what person is not visiting with anybody. Maybe they're standing by a wall or sitting by themselves, and to go to that person because they may need uplifting, or they may have problems, or they just may be shy.
Good idea, Arlene. Thank you. Very good comment. There are many times the Sabbath service itself is a wonderful time to connect with someone, as Arlene says, that may need it in a special way.
I'd like to say thank you to the three panelists up there. I think they did an excellent job, and I can relate to a lot of what you said today, and I really appreciate your presentations.
Thank you. Thank you. Allie, I knew I could count on you.
I'm Allie Dart with the Church of God International in Tyler, Texas, and for all the years that we were in the worldwide, I lived in that little artificial protected cocoon to where the Sabbath was easy to keep. And then when Ron resigned from the Worldwide Church of God, then I was just about forced to get a job because our income was so much less than what it had been before. I've been into real estate for 15 years, and I had to decide whether it was more important to sell the million-dollar customer than it was to... Okay, whether it was more important to sell the million-dollar customer than it was to keep the Sabbath. And so we just, you know, we were going to keep the Sabbath regardless of whether we made a dime or didn't make a dime. So you put the answering machine on the Sabbath and you don't answer it until sunset's over the next day. And it was really, as Ron said today, a confession of my faith, because the entire real estate world in Tyler knew about the Sabbath, and they probably had never been exposed to it, even though they were wonderful Baptist people, you know, generally speaking. But we would come home, and after the Sabbath was over, well, I would listen to my recorder to see what I had to do, you know, the people that had called that day. And I would find that so many real estate agents would phone and say, "Allie, I know you don't work until sunset this evening, but, you know, after sunset, would you call me? I've got a contract for you," or something like that. And it was a real opportunity for other people to learn about the Sabbath, being forced into the world with other working women. So anyway, that's what I would like to contribute to it. And again, I really appreciate what you ladies have said. It's been a real inspiration to me. Thank you.
Thanks, Allie. I think that we have sometimes failed to appreciate the inspiration, as Allie said, that our confession of faith is to others. They may not understand, they may not agree, but they are generally very impressed by that degree of dedication to a principle of belief. Vi?
Hi, I'm Vi Young, and I'm from the United Church Garden Grove. I just wanted to make a comment about how the Sabbath was a delight when I had my six little children at home. We always had a special dinner on Friday night, and one of the children got an opportunity to pick something they really wanted to have, and so we would make it really special, had a special dessert. And then we would read the Bible story, and then we'd kind of rehearse what favorite scripture each one of my children had, and they would go through that. And my daughter didn't even understand 2 Peter 2:9, but she just liked it that we were peculiar people. And she used to always do that scripture all the time. And then we would get around the bed to pray. And my kids would fight was who is next to mom, so they got to pray first. But it was a real special time for us, and I think my children one day will remember back to what how special the Sabbath was to them. Thank you. And thank you for the panel. It was wonderful.
Good memories, Vi. Any other comments? Missy, I know you do some special things with your children since we were just with Missy and her delightful little four-year-old son Friday night. I'm going to put Missy on the spot here a bit.
I had a feeling you'd do that sooner or later. My son actually just started a tradition. We always say we have the special Sabbath dinner and dessert, and we always say just the prayer before dinner, but my son started a tradition of, he usually liked to say the prayer, but then he got all excited just 2 weeks ago, actually, and he said, "Let's everybody say a prayer." So we all take turns. We all have to say something. And he usually starts it, and then we go around the table, and everybody gets a chance to say what they're thankful for.
Justin is amazing. He's only four, but he reads at third grade level. And he was reading Bible passages to us Friday night. You know, it just this little teeny four-year-old who can barely pronounce the words, let alone be able to read them. It was wonderful. Talk about a delightful Sabbath. Very special. Sue, I know you've been a working lady and struggled at times trying to balance so many different roles. Do you have anything you can contribute that you've learned to help you handle the stress and pressure of it all? Now, I think that's wonderful to feel free enough to do that. I know you all could not hear. Sue's comment was that she has found that for her, sleep has been her survival mechanism for the Sabbath, that she often then is in bed by 8 o'clock on Friday night, and she sleeps till 8 o'clock Sabbath morning, and then she has that renewed vitality to go out and face even services and people and those opportunities. How many of us feel like bedtime cannot come early enough on Friday night?
Huh?
Well, along this line, then, is there anything else you ladies would like to discuss or share? Or
hi, I'm Linda Smith from Big Sandy. I just have a question. This is a slight departure. What do you do if you're in a family where you're the only one that's trying to keep the Sabbath? I know more than one person in that situation right now, something that's come up a lot recently. I'd like to hear some comments on that.
That's an excellent question to raise and discuss. Any comments from any of you that have been in that situation or struggle with it? Arlene?
Okay, I was a widow for 3 years. I found myself within a family that I was the only one that was a Sabbath keeper. What you have to do is find someone else in your same position and see if you can't get together and maybe have a quiet dinner, or like they say, have popcorn and a drink, discuss the Sabbath. But you have to do the reaching out and find these people, because there's a lot of lonely people in our church. And being alone, and maybe you're not a single person in the sense that you don't have a spouse, but what I'm talking about is being single, the only one into the church. And you have to reach out, and you have to find those people. You have to create what you need to do.
Good comment. Good comment. In other words, we have to be responsible in that sense for our own circumstances, don't we? That we can let life control us, or we can take control of life. And if we are in circumstances that are less than desirable, we've got to be creative in ways to still help us find those ways to delight in the Sabbath and have it as a joy. Any other comments or ideas or ways people have coped?
Thank you. I'm Norma Colson. I a little higher, please. Being single, I found that often, and not maybe people in the church not knowing you that well, wouldn't think to invite you. So I soon learned that I would hang around after services, and I would find somebody. Sometimes there were three or four people, sometimes five or six. We would find a restaurant that didn't kick you out, and so we'd go and fellowship together. So it got to be quite a group of us for a few years there. So I think that helps. You just have to search out people.
Yes.
And make an effort.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Sue.
And I found out that sometimes you have to realize that you have to give up, that God called you, and he can call your children, and you can let go and let God take care of them, because sometimes you can't change anything, and that's hard to do, and it causes tears and that kind of stuff. But if you can just rely on God, then you do your best when you can. You say what you can, but if the TV goes on or they go play football, you let go and let them. And there's not much you can do. I learned that.
Good comment.
One of the hardest things I had to do when I came into the church at first is it altered my life. Because we did have a close family. We did a lot of family things in our own individual family. And when I became, as you were saying, almost the exclusive one outside the family, I had a lot of time to think about that, and I had to kind of reverse the role, I guess is what you might say. And I had to make it my personal responsibility to try to help them see that there's something good about God's way, and it is to learn to give to them in ways that they find it profitable. Like, for instance, my mother, I knew certain things were important to her. So I tried to maintain those for her and would always try to accent the positive things that I could do with her and for her. And it really does benefit you because you learn about an aspect of giving it you would have never done before. And also I think they become aware that there's something different in that situation. And I would just like to say that my sister also, who does not go along with our particular religion, is a Christian, and she does the same thing that I do with my mother. And my mother has made statements of such as that she is very fortunate. She has the best children, not to glorify us, but because we both have understood to reach out and fulfill her needs, that she's still loved by us, and that we do not reject her because of what we believe.
Thanks, Cheryl. Good. You know, ladies, one more comment here. Go ahead, please, right here, Carolyn.
Yes, I can relate to you because when God called and opened my mind, my parents and our family were very, very close. And I was the only one that was Saturday was a big shopping day with my mother and myself, Christmas, Easter. I mean, it was just the whole gamut. And when we came into this church, that stopped. And she was very, very upset that our closeness had been, our bond had been broken. So I made it a point to, on Mother's Day, anniversaries, Father's Day, make a very special occasion for them, get all the family together and celebrate those days. So that's how we made up for it. But Christmas dinners and Easter and all that was out. And that, I was criticized for a while, but afterwards she began to really appreciate what we did for her.
Yeah. We're just going to make a couple more comments and then we're going to break and let us all have a little rest before we get back into the next session, whatever it is planned for us. But I remember when we started to keep the Sabbath and we were alone, and all I did was pick up the Bible one day and opened it up, and there it was. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And as a literature teacher, I had decided there's one book I haven't read. I should read it. Everything refers to it. It's the Bible. So I picked it up and I started reading it. There it was. And there wasn't any question about it. It's so simple. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And what day is that? 6 days you work and the seventh day you rest. And I am thrilled to hear all these gentlemen offer us all this wonderful theological background and understanding. But that was really all I needed. And I took that book over to my husband and I said, look at this. Because he was a Catholic and I came from a generalist background, having been baptized a Presbyterian but attended many other churches. I said, look at this. And he read it. He said, well, we're going to do it. And it was that simple. And learning to keep the Sabbath at that time alone without knowing anybody else that kept the Sabbath day, and we knew nobody. I thought maybe going shopping on the Sabbath was rest. So I can remember going to Cinderella City in Denver thinking, I'm not working. But got to thinking about it and I realized, well, that probably isn't the spirit of things. There was one more thing that I wanted to mention in my speech, but I wanted to stop. I wanted to make sure everyone had plenty of time before I said it. And that is this gal whose book I was mentioning to you brought out one more principle that I think is important to all of us. And she said, people who have strong personal ties with other people at home, at work, and in church have been found to be especially resistant to the effects of stress. We're a support group for one another. We really, really add to one another. And this conference has added to me enormously. I am so appreciative of having a support group in all of you, knowing that what we've been battling is not only important to us, but it is, I have a group that's with me in this, and it's just wonderful. So with that, I'll give this back to Leanne, and she'll make a comment or two, and then I think we can break and stretch and relax a bit before we get back.
Well, thank you all for your participation. Thank you for being women who love the Sabbath and are here to celebrate that mutual love of this wonderful gift from God. And as they said, Scott said that Dr. Bakayoki is just winding up, so we'll have time to take a nice little bit of stretch and enjoy a break here.